Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we're all questioning our fitness in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, whilst some of our Albion heroes are jetting off around the world representing their countries, we've all been sat wondering, are we fit and proper? Well, fortunately, joining myself and Alan Wares today is a man who knows a thing or two about that. Some call him a boffin. Some call him an egghead. But we call him Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, who has just released a book aptly named Unfit and Improper Persons, An Idiot's Guide to Owning a Football Club. And also, in more somber tones, in a week where we lost a true Albion hero, we're also joined by John Palfrey as we look back on the life of Jerry Ryan. So thank you for joining us, chaps. It's been an interesting week for you, Kieran, with the book coming out, and not such a great week with the loss of Jerry.
Yes, I mean, my brother-in-law used to service Jerry's car back in Dublin, so I was aware of his health issues. Because Dublin's a small town, and it's very sad. You know, I'm old enough to remember Jerry scoring those goals. I was at Anfield in '83, and I was at the Goldstone in '84, and other events where he often starred, and he often he had his reputation. He was known as Welly Ryan for a reason. In that his performances were from the sublime to the ridiculous, but he was still a young man, and it's a very sad day for him and everybody who affections towards him.
Well, John, in a break from the norm, we're going to do Shirt of the Week first, because we've actually got not one, not two, but three Shirts of the Week this week. You've only got two of them so far. I'll send you the other one shortly. Right. But can you have a look at the second one and describe that one for me?
Second one is a rather charming light blue, dark blue, I assume I'm not giving the game away, by classic West Brom style design. Does that get us anywhere?
Nowhere whatsoever, because it's nothing to do with West Brom.
Dark blue, I think, assume that's dark blue, light blue, broad stripes.
Yeah, made by...
Umbro.
Now, if it's not West Brom, AD, and if it's relevant to what's happened this week, I'm going to take a punt and say, because it looks like Phil's kind of photoshopped and mucked about with the badge, which is basically monogrammed, and I think famously WBA was written on one of those shirts. But when you think West Brom away shirt, you think yellow and green.
You do.
So I'm going to take a punt in here. Like I say, given what's happened this week, I'm going to say this is an away shirt of Derby County.
Yes, it is. And would you like to have a guess on the year?
If it's sometime that Jerry Ryan was there, I'm going to say 1976.
It was actually, this was the 77 to 78 third shirt of Derby County. And Jerry signed for the Rams in 1977 and played there for one season. Now, John, Jerry was someone that you've certainly got a lot of affection for. Tell us about your memories of him.
He was always the guy to crop up when the goal needed scoring. He just scored some preposterous goals at the most brilliant moments. You know, he was just a magical player, but undoubtedly my favourite Albion player. My second son is called Ryan, and, you know, there's a very good reason for that. Very much my favourite footballer. He was just cavalier in his style, head down, just got on with it. And scored.
And he looked a bit like a cavalier as well, particularly when he first joined us. I mean, that was a magnificent mane.
Just some memorably beautiful goals. I mean, the first one I'll go back to was the scramble over the line at Nottingham Forest at the City Ground when we turned them over 1-0 back in the 70s. It was such an extraordinary result. They'd been unbeaten for 64 games.
Yeah.
And we're European champions. We were bottom of the league. And we hadn't, I think we'd just got two wins on the board that so far. Yeah. And we were going down.
Were you there?
Yes. It's soaking wet, it's pouring down in what was supposed to be the away end. And there were two things to note. Ryan's goal and Peter Sutherby arrived. And that was his debut, as I remember, from Blackpool. And that the whole season changed at that on that particular Saturday.
Yeah, Kieran, the other thing to remember about this as well, we you know, that you can, some of the goals are available on YouTube, etc. But when you look at the pitches that they were scored on, I mean, they were quagmires of them, and particularly that one where Jerry scored that goal at Forest. I mean, basically, it was a ploughed field. It was just soaking wet and ankle deep in mud.
Yeah, I think people who watch football today have no recompense or of what you used to see taking place on football fields back in the late 70s. Often it was rolled mud. Often it was rutted mud, especially if it had been snowing and icy. And if you take a look at Jerry Ryan's goal against Manchester City, where he did a 60 or 70 euro run and then scored in front of the south stand, how he managed to keep going. Because let's face it, the boots in those days weighed half a ton as well. and he had that ability to skate past players, and he was he was a mercurial player.
Can I just point out that, don't forget, as you pointed out, AD, Jerry Ryan had spent a year at the baseball ground, and then the baseball ground was probably the most famous ground for being a ploughed potato field. So at the very least, having scored at the City ground, he was used to it.
But, and let's not forget, I mean, there's lots of goals we could talk about that he scored. There was lots of goals that we can talk about that he scored. But I mean, one of the most famous was, of course, the third goal in 1979 up at St James's Park that saw us secure promotion to the First Division for the first time, John.
I mean, that took us over the line. What a bizarre day it was. You got up there and the Newcastle fans were so friendly. Reason, of course, if we won, Sunderland stayed down. you know, I just question that second goal if you have a look at it. The goalkeeper jumps over the ball, doesn't even attempt to retrieve it, as it trickles over the line without any notable opposition.
I think Ward blew it over the line, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when Jerry's went in, that was it. You know, there was no way back for them. And, you know, I was grappled. I was actually in a superb seat right in the halfway line due to a local contact. At which point I was grabbed by a local who said to me, you know, well, you're starting to take the piss here, lad. You know?
Well, I think, wasn't it the half-time team talk? Mullery was going absolutely ballistic and it had to take Brian Horton to say, Gaffer, we're 3-0 up, calm down. But if we're going to talk about Jerry Ryan and his thing about that, I cannot for the life of me remember who told the story. For the sake of argument, I'm going to credit Gordon Smith because he's the one I've spoken to most recently about it. There was a kind of an infamous train journey that took forever to get from Newcastle. It was, well, in those days, you had something called the Seagull Special, which was a chartered train. You could A, charter a train, and B, it would go to a given away game.
So and sometimes thing, arrive.
And sometimes, yeah, except for that Forest quarterfinal. But that's another story entirely. Anyway, it was probably whatever it was, a good six, seven-hour train journey back from Newcastle straight to Brighton. And there was parties going on and there was things going on that shouldn't really be mentioned live on air. But one thing that Gordon Smith did say that was actually...
I can give you a name, mate.
The clean story was that everyone was getting excited and Jerry Ryan was saying, this is great. I've got my missus coming to meet me at Haywards Heath Station. Unbeknownst to him, the train had no intention of stopping at Haywards Heath. And as Jerry was about to start opening the door, because he thought the train might have actually pulled in, and it went hurtling through. And he saw his wife on the platform and everyone just waved at her as it carried on straight into Brighton to arrive at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Yeah. But he was certainly very much a part of that. Well, it was only one of...
I think it was actually Nobby that told us that story.
Whatever. Yeah. He was one of only three players who was involved in the 79 promotion and 83 cup run. I actually thought it was two and then I had it corrected. So the other two were Graham Mosley and Peter Ward.
Yeah.
He was very much a part of the Albion. And he... I think he did epitomise... You had Nobby with his skills. You had Lawrenson with his skills. But... Jerry Ryan was one of those who just wouldn't give up. I put it on social media earlier this week. For me, he is the closest equivalent to these days would be Pascal Gross. not necessarily blessed with pace, but with a lot of versatility, skill, intelligence, knew what to do, and, well, like Pascal Gross, could fit in at right back, even if it wasn't his favourite position.
And loyalty, let's cover loyalty. There's no, I finished my season, I've had a good season, I'm off to wherever.
Absolutely. You know, and his career got ended far too quickly by, you know, a horror tackle. And again, I have to tell this story. I so wanted him to come onto the Raw, but this was in the days when we had to get people into the studio in person. So I managed to have a phone call with him. And, you know, it wasn't a quick, I had to explain things and what have you. But with that, after that, I must have had a half, three quarters of an hour chat with him. And it was like, he made you feel like he was talking to his best friend. Mm. Such a lovely, easygoing lout. He was wonderful. And I raised that specter of the Henry Houghton tackle. And it was a horror tackle. And he said, well, it's just one of those things. He didn't blame him. He didn't criticize him. He didn't point the finger at him. He just said, one of life's things, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, Al, we're going to have a go at describing this other shirt here, which, quite frankly, it looks like a seat cover from a coach.
Yes.
Psychedelia.
Have we not had this on before then, AD?
Not this one, no.
Right, I think
we've had several coach seats before, but not this particular one.
Well, seeing as it says the badge says something Football Club Dublin, I think I'm going to let Vicar take over here.
It's the Bows.
Is that
Bohemians?
Is it a team you've gone to see yourself?
What a coincidence, John! Do you know anyone else who used to play for Bows?
I've been to the Bows, I've been to the ground, I've seen Ireland play on the ground in a competitive international. In fact, the competitive international, you'll love this, was against Malta. Now, the FAI used to have this idea that it'd be a really great hoot to invite the away team to sample the fine fare of Guinness Brewery the day before the game.
Yeah.
Only one team, I believe, ever took them up, and that was the Maltese national team, who got completely trashed there the night before the game. And we waltzed past them 8-0.
Fantastic.
Well, I tell you what Phil has to say about this, let's just like to point out that Ireland also had a very good result last night with a certain Evan Ferguson scoring once again for them.
He also used to play for Bohemians, didn't he?
Yes, he did. See, there is a link. And this is what, Phil, this is actually the current away shirt of RS Premier League division side, Bohemians, where Jerry began his football career in 1975. This shirt in the pattern of the Dublin City bus seat covers. There you go. Told you it was seat covers.
Is it genuinely how they've arrived at that, or is it just a coincidence?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, and a portion of the proceeds of the sale of the shirts are donated to Shout Out and LGBT Ireland. So that is but it is actually genuinely a copy of the bus seat covers in Dublin. Which,
fantastic. John, let's get back to you. Actually, I think maybe Kieran as well. The pair of you obviously you follow Ireland and their results, and have done for a long, long time. Tell us how Jerry was revered amongst those who followed the national squad and amongst those who follow domestic football over there.
He never really had a glorious career with Ireland. You know, he played, I think it was 14, about 16 times. And most of those were in friendlies. The only one main game I saw him in was a 2-2 draw in the bathtub in Rotterdam in 82. And it was then, you know, in those days, you know, Ireland had a really storming side with Brady and Lawrence and Frankie Stapleton. You know, we were expected to qualify, and Ireland being Ireland, didn't.
Too many Guinnesses.
It just didn't quite happen. But, you know, he is a popular player, but, you know, he never really had a full run in competitive internationals, sadly.
Hmm. Kieran, do you have memories of Jerry playing for Ireland as well? Obviously the Albion, but for Ireland as well?
I think I saw him play once for Ireland against someone like Iceland. I remember Tony Grealish scored because I'd gone across to see them play. He was a peripheral player. Whilst Ireland had some very good players, they also had, I think, fair to say, quite a few journeymen as well. And therefore, being able to have a winger was actually a bit of a luxury, which meant that his opportunities were very much limited.
Sure. I mean, actually, you just mentioned it. I mean, that is a central midfield partnership you dream of, isn't it? Tony Grealish and Liam Brady.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, I've just sent you over the third shirt of the week for this one. I don't think this needs too much explanation, Kieran. Even you know which colour this one is, I think.
Charming.
Yeah. Yes, this is our 83 to 85 yep. home shirt. Probably my favourite Albion home shirt. The Phoenix Brewery, the pins, the blue with the white and red pinstripes. And the very frustrating, unable to buy the away version, because you couldn't do it in those days, which was the reverse. It was the white with the red and blue pinstripes. But yes. This would have been when Jerry presumably was this for his final matches.
I think I think his career finished in the 84-85 season, so it had got at least about a season and a half out of. Well, this was for one season. I think this shirt was. I got a feeling I could be wrong. The following season was that the one where they had the white horizontal stripes across the shoulders. Was that the following?
It was 85-87. So yes, it would be. Yeah.
Right, got it. So
it was the Phoenix Brewery one first, and then the Nobo one the season afterwards.
Got yes. Oh, we only had Phoenix for a year.
We had it for 2 years, but the Phoenix one was on the blue with the white stripes on the shoulders as well.
Yeah.
Had that first. When you know we have the red version now.
We have the red version.
Anyway, this is what Phil has to say about this one, and it is actually one from his own collection, and it's an extremely rare 84-85 Brighton Hove Albion home shirt. This particular shirt was worn by a certain Jerry Ryan during that season, and it has a very faint signature on the back as well. So, obviously, 68 is no age at all for anybody. It's like and we know he's not been well, but I mean, obviously, this was it's still a shock to lose one of our own like that. I mean, I've got some lovely memories of him. I used to play for a football team called Old Haywardians for a while, and this team basically we all played in vans, and we'd all have a gig on the Friday or Saturday night, and we used to play on the Sunday, and we used to play on the wreck in Linfield. So after games, we used to pop into the Witch afterwards, and.
Jerry
was always there, very welcoming, like roast potatoes on the bar. And
is this about football and Guinness this week then?
Well, absolutely. But yeah, no, that was a great team though. I mean, we had Lewis Prison in our league. We played them twice, home and away, at their place. It's terrible.
Yeah, nice but, one, yeah.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And obviously in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Now, we've got a couple of things on the notice board. Al, if you want to start with the rent.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's probably those who, who've listened to this show get to realise that the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund is closing its books on the 31st of January. That's at the end of its own particular financial year. I'm not going to get too much into detail because of the company I'm keeping on this show this week. And I don't want to say anything stupid and make myself sound even stupider than normal. But yes, it's 31st of January, it closes down. So we've got a few quid to give away. So it's actually quite a pleasure, and this is kind of a bizarre thing to say on a Brighton and Hove Albion podcast, to give, to donate £8,000 to, which was a fairly hefty donation that Renfrew that it can make, towards something called Palace for Life Foundation. It's basically the Palace equivalent of what is now the Brighton and Hove Albion Foundation. Now, I think all clubs have got involved in something called Premier League Kicks, which is effectively outreach for places where it's communities who are up against it. They have their own social issues, And the likes of various football clubs, Crystal Palace certainly do it, Brighton do it in various places across Sussex. They'll go out there and use football as a force for good to, you know, just help people to connect, to play a game, to appreciate people, to use it as an education tool. So it was a genuine honour and a privilege to donate £8,000 towards that. And we're told from the Palace for Life Foundation that it's something that's going to actually do quite a lot of good. We're not there to do actually the education side of it. We're just donating kit and equipment. There's money for kit and equipment. They need things like footballs, bibs, goals, boots. Mm. You know, not everyone can afford this kind of thing. So, you know, if anyone over the past 20 odd years with the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, whether they've donated, turned up to a game, taken part in the quiz, played on the Amex pitch as part of the team, anyone who's got involved and been part of raising over £350,000, be proud of what you've done, because even the merest slight difference that it makes to someone's life positively is something that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't done that. So thanks to everyone for doing that. And there is still a few quid left in the kitty. So if you do want to, if you do know a children's sport or youth sports club that wants kit and equipment, then do get in touch with us at the show here, and we'll have a conversation about what we could possibly do for you.
Okay. Also on our notice board for this week, on Thursday, the 9th of November, as most of you will know, we just happen to have an away game in Amsterdam, of all places, where we take on the mighty Ajax. And at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on that day, ourselves and Under the Lights Comedy Club are delighted to announce that we're putting on a show at the Comedy Cafe in Amsterdam, which is the 5-minute walk from the Centraal station. It's going to feature comedians David Alfie Ward and our very own Stephen Grant, and there'll also be a Q&A hosted by me with somebody who will be announced very shortly. Tickets are £15, but we'll put the link up on all our socials. If you go onto the link, there are early bird specials and group specials and stuff that you can actually get there as well. So just look out for that, and it'd be lovely for as many of you to come along as possible and have a good time. And I'm actually told that actually the Comedy Cafe in Amsterdam, actually the beer is actually slightly cheaper than the rest of the places in that particular area in and around the Dam Square. So it's well worth it if you want to come along and have a laugh. Now, Kieran, you've got a book out.
Yes, I've written a book with Kevin Day, who, just going back to your last story, he's part of the Palace for Life Foundation as well. I know they did a 26-mile charity walk last weekend. For people that don't know Kevin, he's a stand-up comedian, but he's a Palace fan. But he's one of the good guys. You know, in 1997, he did a benefit gig for the Albion, you know, when we were up against it. So he gets the big picture, as I think most of us do in terms of football. So it's a fictional book in the sense that we start off by setting up a club in the Sussex Sunday and Gatwick League. And then we take it through all of the divisions till we get to Europe. It goes through all of the challenges. It looks at all the different types of owners you get in football. It looks at all of the challenges. I think it's a very funny book, although it deals with the serious issues as well. We were quite lucky, you know, because Kevin works in showbiz, that, you know, Gary Lineker got an advanced copy and he said some nice things, and Josh Widdicombe and Alan Davis and Joe Brand and so on. It's gone down well to date. We've utilized our relationship from the podcast and the slightly elevated position we now have in sort of the football business side of things to be able to ask people some of the gory stories. And like all things, it would have been a few pages longer, except the lawyers at Bloomsbury said, they got out their big red marker and said, "Oh, you can't say that about you-know-who and her and so on."
I mean, is it true that, I mean, this book only actually came about because Kevin forgot that he had a two-book deal?
I think that's been added for comedic effect.
But so, he is a comedian.
So with this story that you're telling then, Kieran, are you actually sort of naming names, or is this kind of fiction based on fact?
No, there are lots of real stories from former owners about former owners, and then we have this fictional team, West Park Rovers, and you know, Kevin in traditional style will take the mickey at me. I'm famously colorblind, so you know, the first thing of course to do is to decide what color kit we're going to wear. So Kevin says, well, okay, let's compromise. We'll take the red stripe from the Palace kit and the blue stripe from the album. And we've got our kit sorted. And I'm just nodding, that sounds like a good idea, doesn't it?
Well, it could have been worse. It could have been red and green, and then you'd have had a plain shirt, wouldn't you? So, obviously, I mean, with the writing, I guess that Kevin did the finances and you did the comedy, yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, my job in the book is to be his Jiminy Cricket, because Kevin is all for spending all of the money from our first match when we've actually got a turnstiles. You know, that's going to go on a Guinness based celebration. And I'm going, I don't think you quite do that. I don't think that's quite tax deductible, Kevin. We were quite fortunate. We spoke to people like Mark White at Dorking, who has taken Dorking Wanderers from park football to the National League. And I also know Gary Sweet, the chief executive at Luton, who's taken Luton from the National League to the Premier League. And that element of romance in football does still exist. And we know that there's people out there that are trying to extinguish all of the romance from football. So it's a romantic and wistful look at the game today. There's many sad stories in football. Yeah, we've been talking about the passing of Jerry, but there's so many things that bind us together as well. Mm. Which yeah, we've tried to be sort of overall positive. I genuinely think it is a very funny book as well. You know, the first people that have read it and reviewed it, they've said it was exceeded expectations, because Kevin, for people again that don't know him, he is actually a comedy writer. He writes the scripts for I Got News for You. He's written for Strictly, and he used to write Gary Lineker's opening lines for Match of the Day when Gary had that transition from football to broadcasting and so on.
So I mean, you talk about romance and Killjoys to a certain degree, of which Bloomsbury were to a certain degree, because they wouldn't let you take the team to the Champions League.
Yeah, they said that was unrealistic. Yeah, hold on. Yeah, what about Leicester City? You know, they managed to do it. They managed to go from the Championship to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's work of fiction. Oh no, that's one step too far. So yeah, we had to compromise with the Europa League.
Bloomsbury published Harry Potter, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, I know. And the first time sort of we met up with them, they took us out for lunch, and we went to this very swish, swanky restaurant in central London, because they sort of pitched to us, because one of the guys there is a big fan of the podcast. And then it got to the end of the meal, and we'd eaten well, and you know, I don't drink alcohol, it doesn't affect me, but alcohol had been consumed in substantial quantities, and then the bill came, and you know that sort of awkward thing where you make a half-hearted effort to move towards your wallet. Well, the guy from Bloomsbury just sort of said, "Oh no, it's okay. Harry's paying for this," and me and Kevin looked at each other and go, what's he on about? Who's Harry? They said, no, Harry Potter. Harry Potter pays for everything, as far as Bloomsbury is concerned. Such has been the success of those books.
So is there plans for a sequel of this, perhaps with a team such as, I don't know, John, Cowden Beef? Maybe Bloomsbury will let, like, you take Cowden Beath to the Champions League.
No, that would be too far fantastical.
That would be, yeah.
The blue, Brazil in the Club World Cup.
Look, listen, if West Auckland can win the World Cup, you know, anything can happen. Kieran, when is this going to get turned into a stage play by Paul Hodgson and Steve North?
We'll wait to see how the rights go. Let's see the reaction to the book first. I saw a play a couple of months ago, which was about, ironically, a Brighton fan and a Palace fan meeting up in, I think it was in Spain, following a World Cup match. They were both in the cells. So, the world of Loveydom is always on the lookout for something slightly different. Never. So the rights might not been sold yet, but in theatre, it's always yet.
This has got Louis Miles and Warren Dudley written all over it, in my view.
I mentioned Paul Hodgson and Steve North because they were the first ones to do Fever Pitch on stage. They did it. Paul wrote it and Steve did it as a one-man show, and I think it eventually got taken over by Tom Watt, you know, Curly Watts from... bloke with the glasses.
Tom Watt.
That's him, from EastEnders. And those are the guys who wrote Blue and White Christmas and Bright Until I Die. So there's always dramatic effect to be had from this.
Yeah.
So and this is from a bloke who's actually only read the book through Kieran's Precy. I haven't read it at all yet. And I'm really excited about getting a copy.
Luck would have it, we have a copy to give away. And how could you win one?
Well, Kieran Maguire, our guest, hello Kieran, has very kindly donated a copy of the book, which is going to be winging its way to one lucky winner from this week's show. We have a question to ask, and that is, and we're back to our good friend Jerry Ryan again. While he was a Brighton player, how many caps did Jerry Ryan win for the Republic of Ireland? How many caps did he gain while a Brighton player for the Republic of Ireland? If you think you know the answer, and we want an exact correct answer, please email us at thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. Deadline will be Tuesday, the 24th of October at 5 p.m. So how many caps did Jerry Ryan win while an Albion player? Email thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk. And we will choose the lucky winner on the show this time next week. Kieran, thank you very much indeed for donating a copy of the book. There's one thing I do have to ask first, and this is the most important bit. Kieran, where can we buy copies of this book?
You can buy it at all good independent retailers, also the major chains and the large river-based online retail emporium.
That one.
Nicely done. Nicely done. And can our worldwide listeners get a copy?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, you might be better off getting a Kindle version. I know somebody in Spain has asked me for a copy, and it's actually cheaper for me to buy a copy, go to the local post office and send it to him than for him to go and get it from the local retailers. So it's more complicated. I think when we used to be a lot friendlier to Europe, it was a lot cheaper as well to get your material across there.
Kieran, I'm looking forward to wandering down the train on the way to Amsterdam, seeing lots of bright yellow covers littering the people's hands.
You know this pull-up banner you've got to take with you to Amsterdam, AD?
Right.
I think you might end up having to take an extra suitcase with books in it as well. But don't tell the VAT man.
Chocolates, and I'm going to have stockings as well. It's going to be amazing.
No, actually, books are VAT zero rated in this country, so that doesn't matter so much.
Okay, well, let's move on to the Albion so far this season. John, it's been a decent start. Do you think we've maybe been found out that, you know, we've sold a World Cup winner and the best defensive midfielder in the world, that might leave a bit of a hole, but we might have maybe possibly replaced some of that?
I was so sad that we both of those key players left at the same time, and also, you know, we didn't address the some of the defensive frailty from last season, and I think we've been badly found out in a couple of games. You know, the Villa game was horrible, you know, stuff of nightmares. And we started the same way in Marseille. We need to fix this defence very quickly, I think. Do we need to be adjusting players every game? Do we need to be swapping keepers every game? That's open to debate, but something needs to be done at the back.
I mean, Kieran, I mean, this there has been a lot of rotation. The Derby's not hidden the reasons for that. But do you think that there should be a solid core and then change the bits that need to be changed?
I think there is a solid core as far as Roberto Di Zerbi is concerned. Lewis Dunk, Pascal Gross and Mitoma are the non-negotiables and everything else is flexible. I couldn't name what I would think is the first 11 because I think we've got such a good squad and therefore I don't really have an issue with it. Results have probably been better than performances. There's not been a league game this season in which there's been a nil involved, which I think is unheard of, you know, getting into the second half of October. It's wonderful to watch. We could get stuffed. We could stuff the opposition, but it's not going to be boring. It's not going to be dull. And my view is celebrate every moment of it. We're playing in Europe. We're playing X. Yeah, we're playing Marseille. Let's not worry about the detail. This is just incredible stuff. Yeah, we don't want to get too much of a nostalgia fest, but we all remember the getting stuffed at home by Darlington and Co. Yeah. Just celebrate every moment, create new memories which will last us for the rest of our life, as far as this season is concerned, and see where we end up at the end of the season. If it's high place, great. If it's a moderate place, so what? You know. We're not going down.
Kieran, I mean, we're filming this on Zoom, and obviously you won't be able to see this on beautiful Reverb Vision, but you were possibly getting visibly excited there. You're getting giddy. This is delightful, isn't it? I mean, this is the journey that we've been on. I mean, you know, and it's a delight that, like, Jerry Ryan got to see us play in Europe, probably.
Yeah, you talk to fans of other clubs. First of all, the amount of praise that's come the Albion's way, even begrudgingly from Palace fans, in terms of...
Oh, I bet that hurts.
What we've seen, you know, the admiration, A, for getting the big decisions right, by having a strategy, by investing, first of all, in the infrastructure, by having a recruitment strategy in terms of a coach where the coach fits in with the philosophy of Tony Bloom's vision of football, not the other way round. Secondly, the quality of the football. Even when we lost to West Ham, we still had 80% possession. We were still, you know, their keeper had an absolute blinder. Hmm. It's great football to watch and really, really exciting. I've got no negativities to say. You will look back at this season in a few years' time, and you'll smile to yourself and you'll say, "Do you remember that year where we started every match, where we didn't fear a single opposition?" Yeah, we're going to the Etihad on Saturday. I think we can get a result. At the same time, we could lose 6-0, and frankly, either way, I'm going to go away with a smile on my face.
Yeah. Kieran, are you suggesting?
AD, can I just say, I do like John's opinion, and I do like Kieran's opinion. So therefore, risking splinters up my backside, I'm going to say that I'm going to sit on the fence and take both of them on board. Yes, this is a season to celebrate, because, you know, the loftiness is just amazing. But I think that also, if as much as we take on board the emotions of how we think the football club could or should be run, without having a clue as to how to do it, you know, yes, we do want a midfield that's working a bit better and supporting its defence. My take on it is the defence is as potentially leaky as it is because the midfield in front of it isn't quite as strong as it was last season. And let's face it, in McAllister and in Caicedo, both individually and collectively, you're probably talking about the best central midfield pairing in the world. I'm sure someone else could point out X, Y, Z. And you think this is going to take a long time to replace them. We've got the potential in Carlos Baliba, Baliba, whatever his name is. I prefer Baliba because it fits in with the song better. And you can see the kernels of a truly exciting player there. So I'm gonna take on a bit of what Kieran said and a bit of what John said. Yes, celebrate it, but yes, let's not lose sight of the fact that we do have something. So let's try and keep it.
Yeah, but I mean, Kieran, I mean, I think what you were trying to suggest there is that Ashley Neal and Mark Farrington wouldn't get in this team.
I felt Mark Farrington was vastly underestimated. Ashley Neal, less so.
Hey, I do enjoy Ashley Neal's YouTube videos now because he does YouTube videos about learning how to drive and road safety.
Now, John, we go to Manchester City at the weekend. It's a stadium where we've never had any success. Do you think that can change? Kieran does.
I do, because as Kieran rightly points out, you never quite know what's going to happen next. It's a sort of game where, you know, we could get a result, and of course City have been wobbling a bit. And, you know, if we were to go, as quite possibly could, go one or two up, then, you know, their crowd will start getting on the back. So I think we've got as fine a chance as we've ever had, probably ever will have.
I think we
have beaten them, Al.
Yes. Big Dan Burn with his Bambi on Ice impression. Leandro Trossard taking the mick. The City fans not understanding what a red card is for. And also, I think, helped by the fact that potentially that Kaoru Mitoma ended up with a diplomatic injury. So hopefully he could be rested. Because at times there's been one or two times when he's flicked into on fire. There's been a couple of other times when I'm thinking you're not really at the races, and if you are at the races, then you frankly should be at the football. So, and Lewis Dunk, we're recording this as England are playing Italy. Lewis Dunk wasn't selected to start, so we're not 100% sure what's happening now. I'm not sure how many own goals Harry Maguire has scored before Lewis Dunk comes on and shows him how to do it. But it also means that Dunkey's rested as well.
Gilmore has just scored in Paris.
Say again?
Billy Gilmore has just scored an absolute worldie in Paris.
That would be his first ever professional goal.
Why can't he do that for us?
He's never scored a goal before.
This is not fair.
Well, he nearly did, but people's heads keep getting in the way.
Well, there's that. I'm just wondering how many times. It's a bit like Estupiñán last season. How many times will it be before he scores his first goal?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, like as Al's just said there, John, Lewis didn't get. He's still not started the competitive game for England, although he got man of the match in the friendly against Australia in the week. So that means he's now on the same number of caps as Steve Foster, namely three. Let's hope that he can actually usurp that figure. But I mean, let's look at the international break as a whole. We have had players disappearing off to play for their countries. I mean, do we really want to see Pascal Gross flying all the way to America for a friendly? I mean, obviously, it's delightful that he's managed to get into that Germany squad. But I mean, do these teams really need to go that far afield for a friendly in October?
It's the commercialism of soccer, isn't it? And I think you're going to be seeing more of it. I've often wondered, the League Cup, the sponsors, what are they, Caribou or whatever they're called?
Yeah.
That's a Thai company. I'm wondering how long it will be before they start coming up with the idea of moving that final to Bangkok. And, you know, you're going to start seeing other major games move globally, depending on the money men.
Yeah. Kieran?
If you've got one to say going forwards, ultimately, all decisions are going to be dictated by money, and the romance of the game is going to continue to ebb away.
But you don't want that, because that means that you have to carry on doing your podcast.
I'm fed up. I will have done 800 interviews this year on football finance for TV, radio, newspaper. It's what started off as a fun diversion in my life is taken over. And for every one half decent story, there's 10 ones of sorrow. and concern. You know, we came very close to losing both Scunthorpe and Southend United.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter where the club is based. It's still that sense of identity, that sense of community, that sense of togetherness and memories and you know, making friends which last a lifetime, which are in danger of being lost. And the people who are trying to take over the game, the hedge fund managers, the private equity funds and so on, they've got zero romance. And I think they're in this for the long haul.
Saudi 2030 is now a discussion, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, John, you're a well-traveled chap. You know, given the nature of your job, I mean, you obviously you get to see football all over the world, all over Europe. Is there a same connect? Let's certainly say with Western Europe, you know, most culturally closest to us. Is there the same level of community value in a football club that there is here?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. You know, the clubs themselves, I mean, quite like in Germany, you know, the 50 plus one rule, where a lot of the clubs are still basically owned by the supporters. And then, you know, you have to then go into the workings of some of the ultra groups and their involvement. It can be positive as well as negative with their own communities. So, yeah, very much so.
Because, I mean, the only reason I ask that is that, you know, often when AD's reading out Shirt of the Week, there'll be an obscure Dutch third division club or a Danish second division club, which was formed out of the merger of this club and that club. And I'm just wondering, I mean, it's possibly it might happen at the lower level here, but even then, so let's say a tier six club like Worthing, who we go and see when the Albion aren't playing, is there that level of community support at say the sixth tier of French or German or Italian football?
I wouldn't say it was as much, but you know, it's still there. The roots are still there with those clubs. And you know, there's a small but passionate support. Again, I mean, probably the league that I'm been most involved with is in Germany, and that's certainly the case there. You know, you can go down to the third and fourth division much like you can here, and you can get ridiculous crowds. You know, teams like Rot-Weiss Essen, who are still a major force locally, and they're on their way back up and probably passing Schalke in the other direction.
So yeah, Rot-Weiss Essen are on their way back and
Schalke are going the other way and heading toward the third division now, which is, you know, got out the third division. But there'll be some nice days out, I guess. But Rot-Weiss, very interesting. Rot-Weiss used to be the Schalke's rivals in the 40s. You know, Dortmund hadn't been invented.
Oh right,
it's rising its head again, and it's a subject that just won't go away. Todd Bowley's talking about it. He wants to end the 3 p.m. blackout for TV coverage, which a lot of people are saying would be the death knell for non-league football in this country. I mean, what's the finances? How are you seeing it?
I don't think it will be necessarily, because I think if you want to watch football at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, you can do. You can do so illegally. You can do so cheaply. So, you know, we have a generation of people coming through who are technologically savvy. The appeal of non-league football is for people who, to a certain extent, have rejected the overtures of the Premier League and the sanitized product that you get there. And that product, it technically is absolutely amazing. And, you know, for me, I love the Albion and I want it to last forever. But I think there are plenty of other people that want something cheaper. They like the idea of being able to stand. They like the idea of being able to have a drink whilst they watch the match, to be able to walk to the ground, to walk home. And also not to have to worry about the post-mortem that we have for 4 or 5 days following a football match. So I think it's a different experience. In terms of the next generation of fans coming through, well, we've been saying that for years, that, you know, kids aren't going to be attracted to non-league football, but they do. They still go along with their relatives and so on. So I think it will be harder, but I still think it will exist because it's a different product.
Yeah. I mean, Al, John, I mean, we see it when we go along to Worthing that the average age there is actually a lot lower than you'd think. There is a lot of teenagers there. And they were as much into it as the people who've been going all their lives.
Even seeing Worthing shirts around Worthing. I mean, that doesn't sound very dramatic, but that's never happened before.
No, quite. You know,
they weren't selling them before.
There is that. Well, they've made it.
I don't think they'd sell very many, but.
Yeah, they've made it to the FA Cup first round proper. So congratulations to them. You know, they've got a winnable tie. There are Alfreton who are in the 11th place in their equivalent Northern Division.
Very winnable game.
I think it's a very winnable game, and they certainly have it within themselves to do that. I think it's Horsham, who are the other Sussex County side, who have made it into the first round. They're away at Barnsley, so that's going to be a bit of a humdinger, that is.
I know who got the better draw, to be honest.
In terms of finances, absolutely. But no, I remember Horsham. But was it Swansea they beat in the second round a couple of years ago? A few years ago?
Yeah.
And Lewis took Stoke to a replay as well.
Lewis managed to finance their terrace behind the goal on the back of playing Stoke City. Yeah, no, so it's kind of interesting times. I mean, you know, I've moved out to Worthing. I'm from Brighton. I moved out to Worthing about 3 or 4 years ago. And so kind of getting used to more and more of the culture. And obviously we had lockdown in between. But you can see that Adam Hinshelwood on the pitch is doing an absolutely brilliant job. You know, every time there was the season had to stop, Worthing were at the top of the table. He must have won that division about 3 times in a row. So he's done a brilliant job. And I suspect there might be a fear for Worthing next, is that if they do go up, they're one below the fourth division. I think they've got to make a fair few improvements to their ground. Was it you, John, that was telling me about that this sort of thing is already in train?
Yes. I went to a meeting the top of end of last season, I think it was, and they reckon they can get 5,000 in there. I have no idea how. And what you're going to do about the parking. But they do intend to get it up to National League standard.
Yeah. But again, Kieran, this is something we see up and down the country with teams. It's happened with the latest one was Sutton United, I believe, where, you know, a team, they become successful in the lower leagues. They manage to get themselves into the Football League. And then they have to lose half of their revenue because they're playing on a 4G pitch, which they're not allowed to have in the Football League, and but it's also something that's a community asset which gets used all day every day when they're not playing. It's crazy, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's actually one of the issues that we raise in the book, because as we go through each of the tiers in English football, when you see the handbook that you have to comply with as you go through the different levels of amateur to semi-pro to pro and so on, it is quite scary. And in the case of Sutton United, cost them around about £500,000 to rip up the pitch and replace it with a grass pitch. Are they going to get that money back? Well, yes, they will, because the broadcast money in the EFL is significantly higher. But you're absolutely right, that community asset is no longer there. And I've been to some non-league grounds, you know, on a Tuesday and Wednesday night when I've been sort of doing various fan forums and so on. And it's great to see, because you've got the old codgers like me playing walking football in one quarter of the pitch, and you've got a young girls team playing elsewhere, and you've got people buying pies and pints and pop. And actually it does restore in what is, let's face it, a pretty depressing world at present. I cannot recall on a global scale things being more miserable than they are at present. It does restore your faith in sort of local community and the positivity that can come through football.
Kieran, when you're doing your walking football, are you glad you're doing it not wearing a Castore kit?
Yes, very good. Very good.
maybe you should wear your Price of Football kit. Everyone should wear that. That's the way forward.
I've got one of those t-shirts. It's absolutely beautiful, actually. how did you come up with the design of it?
Well, because I'm colorblind, actually, white kits are fantastic. And what we have seen in recent years is that because football clubs and also the people designing kits want to create this thing called athleisure products, i.e. stuff which you can wear on non-match days,
right.
They look for something from the palette that which is more compatible with other things that you're wearing at the time, which of course is completely at odds with the first purpose of a football kit, which is to distinguish your team from the opposition.
Yes. I probably wouldn't wear a blue and white striped shirt on a daily basis if I could help it. It's deck chairs are not really me, but you know, the t-shirt that we're talking about is basically, it's a white t-shirt. It's got yellow and green hoops on the cuffs and sleeve, collar and cuffs, and it's got a yellow and green hoop around the chest.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. It's very
Santos.
I was actually more thinking kind of cycling top. I mean, even mildly mod. I absolutely love it. I think it's beautiful. So, yes, it is a t-shirt you'd probably wear down the pub without people written. Yeah. People would see it as a football shirt, but because it's not necessary, it's not a well-known football shirt.
Yeah.
It looks pretty damn cool.
Okay, where are we at time-wise?
In existence, Al. Only 77 in existence.
Are there? And I've ended up accidentally with 3. So that's another story entirely.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we're just about running out of time here. So Al, can you quickly give us that question again to win one of Kieran's books?
Okay, Kieran. Very quickly, what is the title of the book that you're kindly giving away?
It's Unfit and Improper Persons: An Idiot's Guide to Owning a Football Club. The working title, The Secret Diary of Farhad Mashiri, Age 10 and 3 quarters, was vetoed by the...
As published by Bloomsbury, after a very nice lunch as paid for by Harry Potter. Our question is, Gerry Ryan, how many caps for the Republic of Ireland did he win while he was a Brighton player? If you know the answer, just drop us the number and send an email to thealbionroar@yahoo.co.uk, and we will pick out the winning entry on our show next week. John, you were going to say?
Jump in very quickly. There is a YouTube thing I didn't see before I found today. Gerry Ryan, The Road to the FA Cup Final on YouTube. Wonderful.
Yes, I watched it today.
Wonderful few minutes with Gerry.
Fantastic.
And of course, don't forget to check out our social media over the next couple of days, where there will be links to our Under the Lights Brighton Hove Albion special in Amsterdam. And hopefully you can come along to that. But thank you, of course, to John Palfrey. Thank you to Alan Wares and the man who, when I was Googling today, a man saved £360 on his train ticket. Yes, that's a genuine article in the Daily Record, people. And it's all about Kieran Maguire. I've been Ady Packham. This has been the Albion Roar. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye.
That guy just hanging at your